This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The soul searching going on during this pandemic is so multi-layered. Is there anything that you're not rethinking right now? Your job, your household expenses, maybe a child's education, your relationships, or just how you move through the world? A new podcast series is exploring those reflections through the eyes of people who came to America seeking more. The podcast from the production company Feet in Two Worlds is called A Better Life. That's A Better Life with a question mark at the end. And it's hosted by Zahir Jen Mohammed. Zahir's a writer of fiction, poetry, and more. He's currently a Zell Writing Fellow at the University of Michigan. He's done extensive work in advocacy and education. He also co-created the podcast Racist Sandwich, which was nominated for a James Beard Award. Zahir Jen Mohammed joins us now from his pandemic perch. Zahir, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you so much for having me.
Do you mind telling us sort of where you are and how you are, just sort of how you've been holding up during the pandemic?
Sure, no problem. So I am in Portland, Maine. My wife is a professor at Bowdoin, and I'm doing okay. You know, Maine hasn't really been hit that bad, so at least for some residents, which I can get into later. But I'm doing okay. I think at the start of the pandemic, it was hard for me to leave Michigan. I'm deeply attached to Michigan. And so March was kind of this sudden, like, upheaval in my life, but I've kind of gotten into a rhythm of pandemic life. And I have to say, this podcast that I've been doing has helped me channel some of my anxieties through reporting the show. And it's allowed me to ask questions about what's happening in this country that, even though I was born and raised in the U.S., there's so many things I don't really get about the U.S. anymore.
You start out the podcast right there in episode one, acknowledging that you have some grounding in these conversations that you're having with people in the podcast. Your family has early roots in India, but your mom and dad grew up in Tanzania. And by the time you came along, your folks had settled on the West Coast in Sacramento. What kinds of things did you feel like you understood about the present moment? And what kinds of things did you want to find out with the people that the podcast is interviewing?
Sure. So I think growing up, one of the fundamental things that I never really questioned was that the U.S. was the best place that we could end up. But at the start of the pandemic, I remember getting a phone call from one of my cousins back home in Tanzania. And it was like, he was like, "We're really nervous about you. And we're really worried about your health. Are you guys okay? We're seeing the numbers." And I was thinking, oh my gosh, growing up, I worried about my family back home in East Africa. And now, because of the crumbling infrastructure in the U.S., the healthcare problems in this country, they were worried about us. And so I kept thinking, like, and I kept hearing immigrants, including my parents, ask the question, like, well, what if we hadn't come to the U.S.? Would we be safer? Would we be less vulnerable? And then, of course, with the election, those questions are just amplified, given that anti-immigrant rhetoric, unfortunately, is such a staple part of American life in 2020.
The first family that we meet in the podcast is a mother and daughter, and the daughter lives in New York, and her mom lives in Colorado, and her mom was originally from South Korea. And one of the things that they share is that they both love the movie Dirty Dancing, but they're also sort of sharing this conversation about the paths that their lives have taken. Could you tell us about them?
Yeah, sure. So that's our producer, Mia Warren, and her mother, Hija. And Hija is debating about whether or not she should move back to Korea. Korea has managed to contain the coronavirus. And Hija's wondering, well, does she stay close to her kids or does she go back to Korea where she might feel safer and get better health care? And there was a bit of worry that she might have even had COVID. So there was a lot of anxiety that she was facing. And I feel like a lot of the people that we've interviewed have been weighing these conversations, like, should I stay or should I go? Some people, like Hija, have said, well, they'll stay in the U.S. They want to be close to their kids. Some people are trying even harder to come to the U.S. because, let's say, the U.S. is still better than Mexico, for example. But others I've interviewed are saying, well, maybe this is a time to think about going back. Part of the reason why the podcast is A Better Life with a question mark is a better life still possible, given the economic anxieties, given who's been disproportionately impacted by COVID-19? Something that, honestly, I never really questioned before. I mean, not that I was ever rah-rah America, but I always thought, okay, like, this is a place where immigrants can find a better life. I'm not really so sure anymore.
Yeah. On the surface, the questions that Mia and her mom are asking each other are about just medical care and basic survival. But the thing that's so wonderfully surprising about their story was that her mom was also confronting some pretty essential questions about the places she'd chosen to live and what her relationship was with them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think she's having to weigh, like, what does it really mean after so long to be in America, to fit in America? And what are also the kind of sacrifices? I mean, I think about this all the time with my parents who are immigrants from Tanzania. Like, what are the sacrifices that they've had to make? Like, I'm in Portland, Maine, and it's not the most diverse state. In fact, I think it's the least diverse state in the country. And, you know, when my mom visits, whenever this pandemic is over, I worry, when we go out, will she feel uncomfortable going out for dinner? My mom recently started wearing the hijab or the Islamic headscarf. And I don't know. I mean, Maine has a pretty high number of hate crimes per capita. So these are conversations that are they're painful, and there's no easy answer. And that's partly why I'm so honored to be part of this podcast, because there's a variety of answers that we get throughout our episodes. Some are saying, yeah, like this is still the place they want, and they're going to double down on trying to make a life possible. And others are feeling conflicted. And I would say that most are feeling conflicted, like Mia's mom.
There's a second story in episode one about this woman named Elsa Don Juan, who came to the U.S. with her husband when he got a job in the States. And her folks are still in Mexico. And it's something, I think it's a story a lot of people can relate to, because it's about being far away from someone you love who's very sick. Her parents get the coronavirus, and she decides she's going to go down and take care of them. And it just drives home the questions that a lot of people who have family in other countries might be feeling right now. Is that something you think you'll explore further in the series?
Yeah, absolutely. We do have some episodes where, even though the infrastructure is crumbling in the United States and is quite poor, especially the health infrastructure, it's still better than in other countries. Elsa has a quote in the episode. I think it's like, when America gets a sneeze, Mexico gets the flu, which is things are so much worse there than they are here. And so Elsa is grateful to be in the United States and grateful for the healthcare that she's been able to receive. And so that's the thing. If you are of means, you still can get better healthcare. But what are the sacrifices then that one has to make? Even if you do get better healthcare, do you really feel like you fit in? Like, what are you leaving behind?
You know, you alluded to the fact that very often American political debate about these issues gets stopped cold with an America love it or leave it kind of ethos. What do you feel like we miss when we discuss an immigrant experience in those terms and don't leave more room for some of the subtleties of the conversation?
It's funny, like when I was teaching at the University of Michigan, so I taught creative writing, I used to tell my students, it's like, think about your favorite sports team. You know, you support them even though you find that there's a lot of flaws in your team. So I see this with my friends who are Knicks fans, you know, or Detroit Pistons fans. And I feel like with so many of the immigrants that we've interviewed, they feel the same way about the United States. They might have their criticisms, they might wish things were different, but for them, their patriotism doesn't oftentimes derive on who's in office or what the government is like, but from other interactions, like they might love the parks. Like in Maine, so many of the people in the Somali community that's been so deeply impacted by COVID, they tell me, I love Maine and I don't want to leave because I'm attached to the ocean, I'm attached to the parks, I'm attached to the mountains, I'm attached to the people. So patriotism doesn't just have to derive from how our government is faring or who's in power. What if we shifted our definition of patriotism? What if we allowed for more gray area where people can say, well, on some days, just like with your sports team, on some days you like it, some days you don't, but you're still going to support it. And I wanted more complexity in this podcast. And I'm happy that we've given immigrants a chance to sort of tell their own stories.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is writer Zahir Jen Mohammed. He's the host of a new podcast called A Better Life that concerns the experiences of American immigrants. Zahir, there was a time in this country when immigration and refugee immigration was more defined by white Western European immigrants, when Irish American people and German American people were reviled in a lot of the ways that we see people from Somalia, you know, people from China being reviled these days. And there's, you know, it's like there's been this acclimation process by which those, you know, Irish, German, Italian people all suddenly became identified as white over time. And a lot of the fear-mongering that was associated with the immigration debates shifted focus so that nowadays, you know, the when politicians are trying to whip up fear against immigrants, they're trying to play on white people's fear of brown people and black people or sometimes Asian people. Do you think that America's ever going to get past this stage of perception of immigration?
I'm so glad you mentioned this because, like, so I'm in Maine, and the KKK was very active here in the early 1900s, but oftentimes the animus was against, let's say, Catholics or Irish or Italians. Here in Maine, it was against French Canadians. So the KKK was rallying against French Canadians in Lewiston. Today, Lewiston, and I'm working on an episode about Lewiston, has a high concentration of Somalis, and there's a city council member, her name is Safiya Khalid, who I interviewed, who's only 24 years old. And there's been a ton of hate against the Somali community. Someone threw a pig's head in a mosque there in 2006. So I think that things are definitely changing the demographics. And there's a minority of Americans that's fearful of that change. And they think, wait a minute, like Maine doesn't look like it used to. At the same time, I will say since the George Floyd protest, I've felt an incredible amount of optimism. I'm usually kind of a half empty glass type of person, but I see all the Black Lives Matter signs. I see the new spaces where people are talking about issues of race and identity. I see the people winning elections. And I think, wow, this is incredible. I see, look at Safiya Khalid, 24-year-old Somali woman, came to America as a refugee, I think at the age of 7. And now she's a city council member. It's amazing. So I think partly, like, I look at, I know this is going to sound sort of weird, but I look at sort of the younger generation. I look at some of the conversations that during my generation, I'm 43, we just didn't have the same conversations of race when I was in high school and college. But now you look at Saturday Night Live and they're making jokes about whiteness. That's progress. I wish things were better. I wish there wasn't this surge of anti-immigrant sentiment. I also wish COVID didn't disproportionately affect black and brown people in America. But I also think that COVID is showing faults in America that we need to address. So I do feel hopeful, and largely it's because of those George Floyd protests. I really was in kind of a dark place in April and May, but then I saw the protests and I saw the incredible amount of support and the solidarity, and I thought, wow, this is beautiful. I've never seen something like this in my life.
Yeah. You're a West Coast guy, and you lived in California. You and I both lived in Oregon for some years, but I feel like you have been such a man of the Midwest in recent years. You were in Columbus, Ohio for a little while and in Ann Arbor. And now, of course, you're in an entirely different part of the country in the East Coast. But I just wanted to ask you about how your time in the Midwest and its patterns of immigration maybe influenced how you think about America's populations and how they're changing.
I'm so glad you asked that because I have a soft spot for the Midwest. I think I'll admit that I have my coastal elite biases coming from California. When I moved to Columbus, I encountered this absolutely beautiful, wonderful Nepali community. I think one of the largest Nepali communities in America is in Columbus. One of the largest Somali communities in America is in Columbus, Ohio. And it's I think one of the things that I got frustrated was, oftentimes when we think about, like, you know, middle America, we think of white, you know, let's say, you know, Trump supporters. Well, middle America is also these very dynamic Somali community, very dynamic Nepali community, many of whom are thriving and starting businesses that the city loves. There's a beautiful mural of a Somali woman in Columbus that came up, I think, a year or two ago. In Ann Arbor, Michigan, I used to go to Dearborn, a very dynamic Arab community. A Yemeni individual, Abraham Ayash, just won for state representative, making him the first state elected official from the Yemeni community. So I'm seeing a lot of changes, and I think sometimes people write off what happens in the middle of America, and they think about Ohio, and they think about opioids, they think about Trump voters. I'm not saying that those things don't happen there, but I've learned to see a greater complexity in life in between the coast and to really appreciate the possibilities there. I also think that sometimes that places like California that are so progressive, and I put that in quotes, oftentimes have problems of race because they don't have those tough conversations. Whereas in Columbus, there are those tough conversations. At least I saw them. In California, people think, oh, we're good, everything is fine. But, I mean, we've seen all these anti-Asian attacks in the Bay Area, for example, after COVID-19. I mean, this is the Bay Area. The Bay Area is super, super diverse. I love the Bay Area. So I think people can be sometimes more vigilant in places that they know they have a history of racial strife, and how can they address that? So I have a soft spot for the Midwest, and I think people write it off really easily, but there's wonderful, dynamic communities of color that are thriving. I think as journalists, our responsibility is to really get out of the way and say, okay, you guys got some great stories. Now tell your stories, and we need to sit back and listen.
I can't resist asking, knowing how much you love food and how much you love to eat, if there's anything that you've been turned on to in Maine that you had not had before?
Let's see. Gosh, that's a good question. So obviously the lobster rolls are incredible, and
for
oysters.
Sure.
I have to say the food in Maine is pretty spectacular. But I think that in Maine, one of the things that I've really enjoyed is there's a very large dynamic African diaspora here. So Maine is about 1.5 million people. About 2% of the population is Black, of which a large number are from Africa. Now, my family is from Tanzania. So there's a place that I want to shout out called Burundi Cafe. And they have these like samosas that are very similar to the samosas that my mom made growing up. And so it's lovely to come into community with these dynamic African communities here, many of whom have started coffee shops like Rwanda Bean, and it's lovely. So I think like when people think of Maine, they think of lobster rolls. I love lobster rolls, but there's also these other communities as well too. And so when my friends visit, at least before the pandemic, I try to steer them into these new directions to say, look, Maine is changing. It is the whitest state in America, but the new waves of immigrants are often from Africa, and they're making the state better.
What comes to mind when you think about what would be most helpful for people you profiled who are in really dire situations right now?
No, I think the only other thing just to add is that right now I think it's such a critical time in the United States. I think part of the reason why I think this podcast is so timely is this is the time in which a lot of states are coming up with their budgets in terms of how much money should be allocated for COVID relief. And I would urge people to look at those numbers and say, well, how much money is being directed to immigrant communities? Because oftentimes immigrants are more disproportionately affected by COVID. And so that to me is something that like I've been following since I had a policy background, like how much money is being given to immigrant communities? Because that's really right now what can be done is how to help immigrant communities. We'll make sure that the money goes to people who are directly impacted by this virus. And oftentimes I haven't seen that happen. So that's the one thing that I would urge people to look out for.
The episodes are dropping on Thursdays, and the podcast is called A Better Life with a question mark from Feet Into Worlds Productions. And the host of the podcast is Zahir Jen Mohammed, a Zell Writing Fellow at the University of Michigan. Zahir, it's great to hear your voice, and we're glad to hear you're doing okay.
Thank you so much, April, for having me. My pleasure.